Flexibility is great. That's why there's yoga. Flexibility for your insurance coverage is great too. That's why there's United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, United Healthcare Insurance Plans offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. One of these plans may be right for you if you're, say, between jobs, coming off your parents' plan, turning a side hustle into a full hustle, or even missed open enrollment. Want more flexibility? Find out more about United Healthcare Insurance Plans at uh1.com.
This is Paige, the co-host of Giggly Squad, and I want to tell you about a company that I've been loving, Olive & June. Olive & June gives you everything that you need for a salon-quality manicure in one box. And if you break it down, it really comes out to $2 a manicure, which is absolutely insane. It's also so easy to get salon-worthy nails at home with Olive & June. The difference between how your nails used to look when you did them yourself and now with the Manny system is a complete game changer. The best thing about Olive & June, too, is it's a quick dry. It dries in about 1 minute, lasts for 5 days, and full coverage in up to 1 to 2 coats. Visit oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system. That's oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system.
James Bonding Podcast.
Welcome to Indiana Jones Ing. The man is back and he's bringing his hat.
Oh, his hat stayed on. So much of this episode.
Adventure has a new hat.
There's a whole trailer they did. It was just about the hat.
I think you're right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It was the hat was constantly flying off, and then Harrison Ford staples it to his head, and then he's riding a horse and it stays on.
Maybe. Yeah. Oh, the teaser trailer. Yeah. Yeah.
Maybe that's how they continue the franchise. It just becomes a sentient hat.
I don't mind that. You know, it's like the hat chooses you.
Yeah.
If you're true of heart,
yeah.
You become the next Indiana Jones.
If you think things belong in a museum and not in a personal collection, the hat chooses
you. The Smithsonian. The Marcus Brody of the Smithsonian ends has to get all of Indiana Jones' props. Because I think the hat and jacket are in the Smithsonian, right?
That's true.
So yeah. The whip, the grail.
I know who has his pistol.
Yeah. Who?
Dave Mandel.
Who's Dave Mandel?
Showrunner of, he was showrunner of Veep and.
Which pistol? Like from Raiders or that Webley from this movie? Ooh.
The Raiders pistol.
Wow, that is cool.
Well, if you had any doubts, this is Indiana Jonesing. I'm Matt Gourley.
I'm Matt Myra.
I'm Paul Rust. Oh my gosh, Indiana Jonesing is back. The hat is back.
Yeah, the mat is back.
And I would say the hat is looking better than ever.
Yeah.
Myra's favorite.
It is.
That's right.
Absolutely my favorite.
Yeah. I love it.
Paul and I, think if forced to choose, are probably Raiders boys, right? We discovered.
Yes.
Look, this movie.
The Los Angeles Oakland Raiders, like, first and foremost.
This rewatching of it really. No. No one wants. No one's interested.
Wait, Siri just gave you some kind of sports schedule just because we said Raiders?
Yep. The Raiders take on the 49ers August 13th at 1 p.m.
Why doesn't she launch into the Raiders re-release into theaters?
I know, right?
That showed at Look Dine-In Cinemas, and how come Siri was so quiet about that?
That'll be at Allegiant Stadium, in case anyone's wondering.
Oh.
Wow.
Good to know. That's why I brought it up.
Thanks, Siri. But rewatching Last Crusade really, I think, reaffirmed my opinion.
Yes, so, I love it.
It's not only is this movie peak of his powers, Indiana Jones, as far as I'm concerned, mm-hmm. but it's also got heart, you know?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And humor.
And the mm-hmm. most comedy of any of the movies. And
the most Nazis getting killed.
Oh, yeah. Most successful comedy, that's for sure.
Oh, for sure.
It's a screwball comedy, this movie. I've seen this movie millions of times.
Sure.
And Amanda and I sat down to watch it last night. And I was taken aback at actually just watching it with a critical eye for a podcast, which I've never done. It's just a straight up screwball comedy. And that's not a critique. I love what this movie is.
Yeah, you're right. It's all, there's never any... too serious. And if it is, it's about the love of a father for his son
That's what they're both really searching for, not the grail.
Oh, but the father.
Yeah, and that's straight out of Spielberg, because I think Lucas wasn't really into that as much. But you know Spielberg, he's got to get those daddy issues.
Lucas wrote the treatment called Indiana Jones and the Monkey King.
Which I've read.
Yes, 9-page treatment.
Rough.
Of course.
This is like a haunted castle. Yeah.
Scottish manor.
Yeah.
Haunted Scottish manor. He has to stab a demon with a inscripted dagger.
Ooh, ooh. That ain't no holy grail. No. Inscripted dagger.
Holy fail.
Right?
Oh, hashtag holy fail.
But they go back to the well of
souls.
What would we call it, I guess?
Just well back to God. A well. I see. Uh-huh.
And it's a great well to be in.
Yeah.
Like, I forgot. Like, part of me is like watching it. I'm just going to really sort of clear my brain of the movie.
Yeah, that's what I did.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Try to enjoy it. Mm-hmm. And, like, I found myself at first being like, you know, Donovan's not so bad. Nah. Like, at first, like, this seems like he's, you know, really into collecting antiquities.
Right. He's just a collector. He's just a nerd.
Yeah. And yeah. Like, he's immediately like, oh, thank you for all your donations to the museum over the years, which is like, I'm like, okay, this guy's pretty okay.
Yeah.
Even though the people that get out of the car to stop Indy after he has a panic attack and leaves his job of professor.
Which I definitely can relate to.
Oh my God.
The panic part, you know.
It was really interesting to sort of just watch him bail on his life.
Yeah. I was happy to see he was popular because nothing I think makes me sadder than the professor who has office hours where no students show up.
Oh, right. Yeah. As someone who has taught many years of college, mm-hmm. I can tell you that that is the most wonderful position to be in.
Really? Because no, I think nobody ever shows up at office hours because
no,
my professors
I mean.
Would
it's
always
nice.
Go,
but that's a good professor.
Hey, nobody
though.
Ever, why don't you guys ever come? I'm sitting there for an hour once a week and none of you take an opportunity for
not
this.
Not me. I was always like, you know, best to reach me by email, whatever.
Oh, well, I think that's because we might have a Dr. Jones situation with the love girl. Did you have boys and girls writing things on their eyelids and blinking at you slowly?
They just did like a body paint makeup of awake eyes as they would sleep.
I thought I was like, this means he's a terrible teacher. Yeah. Like, because he's unclear in what he's assigning and what the work is. Because
he's always assigning as they're the bell is rung and they're leaving. And he's like, Euphrates chapters 1-10. Look at where it's, you know.
We're looking at the dig, the 1898 dig of the Egypt. Okay, bye.
I noticed his energy has changed, though, because remember in the first one, he's sort of like befuddled and thrown off by the flirtations.
Now
this one,
he's into it.
He's got tenure or something, I guess, because when they were leaving, he was making the eye contact at them.
Yeah,
I know.
And I noticed that. And then I reflected. I was like, is this the movie's first way to tip you off that Marianne ain't around anymore?
Oh,
like, because if they had replayed like a student flirting with him and he was like, ooh, you'd think maybe like, oh, is he like, no, I'm Marianne's man. But when do they officially say Marianne's not here? Is it just kind of assumed, right?
Well, yeah, they don't really. So, but now retroactively looking at Crystal Skull, that whole thing happened before this, I'm assuming. So they weren't together long. They were together long enough to conceive Mutt.
Yeah. I
mean, so Mutt God was... bless. Well, there's also another weird timeline here. Because the Utah scene takes place in 1912.
Yeah.
The new movie takes place in 69 and Indy's 70.
Yeah.
So that means he was born in 1899. So River Phoenix is supposed to be 13 in that opening.
Mm-hmm. Sure. I'll buy
it. That's okay. I mean, he's advanced 13.
What was he in real life at that point? He's probably born in 1970. So he was probably like 18, 19.
Yeah, 19.
He's really good at being Harrison.
He
Ford.
Is.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah,
we were robbed.
You're not even aware really of Harrison Ford's mannerisms until you see someone else doing them.
Yeah. And thanks to Brantley Palmer, our researcher sent some notes and mentioned about how these two worked together on Mosquito Coast. And so he had already had like Harrison Ford data that he could mine to mimic him and stuff.
Oh, and any 15-year-old boy is going to be hanging out 2 months with Harrison Ford. I would be emulating him from like day one.
I mean, so we already
pretty
all were
easy
anyway.
To like copy him.
But speaking of Brantley, and before we get ahead of ourselves, we have to go backward a little bit to Indiana Jones and the Temple of Doom, because we have some information on the egg catching scene. Thank you to Brantley Palmer.
Yes, thank you, Brantley. He got to the bottom of
He went on a deep dive.
Chicken or egg.
And first thing he found was, of course, the comic book that
started it all.
Is that a Marvel?
Yeah, really? But it's really the novel. And then he found the script and it's not in there, but then he found the shooting script.
Yeah, that was the thing that blew my mind, because I've never seen this before.
Yeah, it's in the shooting script. There's also a storyboard, but there's still to this day doesn't seem to be...
Oh, and the big thing was, there's some shots of the pilots and looking at each other like, oh.
Yeah, and he's got the gun. And there's a call sheet and that they're going to shoot the egg thing. But there's a whole Rube Goldberg thing with the egg falling down all the crates and little cages and stuff. And Indy catches it.
Yeah.
So it looks like it was probably shot.
Yeah, it's in the call sheet.
So
listed.
That just makes me wonder, how did this originally come up? Who first was remembering it? Was it you, Paul?
Yes.
Yeah, for
so
sure.
I wonder if you must have seen it in maybe he thinks maybe TV promos might have
happened. No, I never believed that there ever. It was me just being, when you go on, when you're hard up for more indie talk and you go to indie web boards from 2006, they had a big thing talking about this, and I just thought it was interesting.
I wonder if it ever made its way into like a TV cut of the movie, because like if you watch Jaws on TV with commercials, you get, there's a couple extra scenes you get. Like one of them is
Halloween as well.
Quint
Aliens.
Going to the music store to purchase piano wire to use for shark catching.
Yeah.
And there's a kid playing an oboe trying to play Ode to Joy on it. And,
that's right. I've
and Robert
that.
Shaw gets behind him and is like, bop, 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 bop,
that's awesome. Oh, yeah, because you get a little bit more of Quint's funny buddy.
Yeah.
I like that little guy.
I just can't believe this would have
like rubber.
Never be uploaded to YouTube though. Someone would have a VHS copy.
I think it's it'd be really cool if somewhere you could find the footage. It must be the people's novel and comic book. You'd make a little thing in your brain.
I think so.
But what's your favorite TV extra scene? Like, for me, I remember Problem Child having chock full extra TV version scenes that I was so thankful for. Oh.
Ghostbusters 2, I believe, also had a couple extras.
Like what?
Yeah.
A little bit more.
Another 1989.
Yeah, another movie. 89.
Another
sequel.
Summer of 89.
Wow, what a summer it was.
Oh, man, no kidding.
There, it's a little bit more of Winston, Ray, and Egon in the tunnel. And covered in slime and in the restaurant.
1989. We've talked about all the movies that came out. I didn't realize this movie opened up on May 24th, which was the day after my birthday. I've just turned 16. I'm probably driving to this movie.
I mean, that's unbelievable.
And I'm not
speeding.
Because I failed my driver's test.
Speeding.
So I'm being driven because I failed my driver's test the first time. But still, life is looking good. I mean, what a summer.
Yeah, because what you got? You got that, and then Batman 89, and
Ghostbusters
2.
Lethal Weapon 2.
Robot in that
Cop,
order.
RoboCop 2, right?
Is that right? You got License to Kill.
Mm,
there's some more.
Back to the Future Part 2 in November.
3, I believe.
Yep.
I mean, fuck.
Which is funny, because if you look at the top box office movies in 1988, it's like staggering how they're all original. And like half of them are comedies. I partly wonder if it's, you know, there was a big, not just going with 2023 eyes here, but there was a big writer strike in 88. That's like why Batman 89 script is a little wonky, because they were like had to start shooting. Like some of the scenes are just kind of like, what? How's this piece together? So I wonder if maybe it was just like, hey, next year there's a strike. Let's focus on, like, literally every studio had its own little sequel. In its
It is kind of like the beginning of the end of like how franchise IP took over the world.
Yeah.
I think 89 is probably
the
birth year.
Looking at it through
a
lens of now, you know?
You think?
Yeah, because like even in the 50s, there were 500 Davy Crockett's. You know what I mean? It's like...
That's true.
This is like a thing that has always existed. The Flash Gordon cereals.
But
going
those
back
were
to
always
the 40s.
B-level. This is the A-level version.
Sure.
Yeah.
But like the whole idea of like now, there are no original ideas in Hollywood. is like, there never have been. Mm. Let's come on. Mm-hmm. Come on, guys. We're all in the industry, you know, we live nearby.
It's interesting, the original ideas thing, because I was thinking about when I was watching this, like, you know, Temple of Doom, all of their set pieces were ones they couldn't get in Raiders. It's like, oh, the mine cart and the going down in a car out of a plane and an inflatable raft. And so, like, but this one seemingly doesn't have any holdover set pieces. I imagine they had to draw these from scratch. Unless you remember in the 9-page treatment, was there any like, oh, there's a tank horse scene or something?
They go back in this one, according to Brantley. I didn't realize this. After a really favorable test screening, they still wanted to add more, even though the studio was saying, no, we're good.
Which is funny because the first or second to Last Crusade is definitely the Indiana Jones movie I've seen the most because we had it on VHS and I wore it out, loved it. I remember like the first or second time I saw when that motorcycle chase happened, thinking, this movie is action packed. It is just relentless. Yeah. And it does the trick. And if you think about it, if it went just from him getting the dad out of the castle and then pulling up to Berlin or Donovan having the conversation about getting the, you'd be like, it was kind of a lull there. But it is wild to go from them escaping the fiery, you know, room to the motorcycle chase and then to the plane, to the tunnel, to the, it's like amazing. Yeah. That is like a whole 30-minute block.
What's your favorite set piece in this movie, guys?
I mean, I think it's Indy going through the trials.
I think for me, it's the castle, the whole castle sequence. I love like, from rescuing dad to the fire to the motorcycle chase.
My favorite action sequence in it, this is great, guys. We all chose different ones, is the boat chase.
The boat chase is,
I think it's the really weakest good. Opening of any of the indie films.
Well, because it's not Indiana Jones.
Even maybe Crystal Skull.
You like Crystal Skull more, opening?
I don't hate that opening.
I watched that opening again recently. It was cool how it like stylized it was.
Sort of blown away by like just the vistas and like the lengthy, long shots that he sat on, like in Monument Valley and stuff.
Well, then it sets up that really funny gag then that when they get up close, then you realize it's little kids.
And then
the most pivotal day of anybody's life where you have five trademarks of your entire future. 30
seconds, he gets a bullwhip, gets his scar, gets afraid of snakes. And
gets the hat.
That comes a little bit after. This is what I say every time Glenn doesn't get her way and freaks out. I always go, you lost today, kid, but it doesn't mean you have to like it. I think I've already said that on this podcast.
Should we write a prequel about that guy?
The man in the fedora man, I think is his.
Fedora man.
From Friday the 13th part five.
He's the halfway house counselor.
Yeah.
I like that guy.
I'm trying to like think, is he like just like an archaeologist for hire, or is he even in archaeology?
It does seem like Indy fused his dad side of the guy in the den by himself thinking, and then the adventurer dude that day. And he was like, I'll just be action packed like that guy, but thoughtful like my dad or something.
It is kind of funny when Sean Connery is asking him, is this what a typical day is like for you? Like,
it's funny because I wonder, you know, they do go, when they go to the dad's house, they see it's ransacked, right? Or is that, that's not Indy's house, that's his dad's.
Yeah,
right.
So his dad lives in the college town with him.
Somewhere nearby, yeah.
That's a whole, I mean.
Do they teach at the same college?
A father and son who kind of are estranged coming together for an adventure and figuring it out. It's like, oh, that guy who I go and I buy groceries for him every week and I drop him out. Like, it's kind of a weird, like when you think about, oh, the last 5 years, they've been probably bopping about.
Yeah. Do they teach at the same college? Because he's still teaching. They say he's the one that the students hope they don't get.
Yeah.
Oh, Marshall that'd be College. Amazing if they taught at the same college and still didn't talk.
Yeah.
Like one of those things. You're like, I never see Kiefer and Donald Sutherland ever together.
But they're currently speaking. They just didn't talk for 20 years, or have they not?
They haven't talked much in 20 years.
But come on, they're in the same. That's not as much of a.
I got the feeling
we've barely spoken in 20 years, and then. And then Connery's like,
so like
okay,
the faculty lounge
I'm
is just,
here. Let's talk. What do you want to say?
Yeah.
He goes, I don't know. And then they get into the book and they're like, okay, so here's what we got to figure out.
Yeah.
And they sort of come together on that.
Yeah. Yeah. That's cool. I like that part.
Do you think the Sean Connery was insulted by Harrison Ford's Scottish accent?
When he goes
in
the castle.
Yeah.
And I never put it together until this time that he does that because probably Indiana Jones knows how to do a Scottish accent because he is a Scottish father. I never put that together.
That's so good. Yes. I love that.
Got the Lord. I am Mickey Mouse.
Did you know that's not Mickey Mouse?
Huh?
That's not Mickey Mouse that he says. That's why it goes off his shoulder weird and his mouth, his lips don't match it.
What does he say?
Jesse Owens.
Oh, that is, I'm glad we didn't go there.
Yeah.
Yeah, there's a little bit of that. And I also never caught when Donovan is giving treasures to that Sultan that he says, donated from some of Germany's finest families. I never put together that oh God.
Well, we talked about in the previous episode, the people talked about, that's the big thing people have made up is that they sat, when they saw it in theaters, that he said, Jewish families.
Oh, right.
That's and then
right.
I went down this whole hole where somebody pulled the 35 millimeter print and looked at the sound waves to show that it always dropped down at that part. And that was never in there. It's just, it's because it pauses as he's going behind somebody. The other weird sound thing that I found out today on a Reddit, the music that's playing when the scene you were talking about, like, what do you want to talk about?
Yeah.
Okay, let's look at the book instead. There's jazz music playing on the thing, and it's the same music that's playing when Donovan first walks in to his office when he gets first introduced.
Oh.
Probably they just needed music. But the reason it was brought up is because it slightly sounds like the Imperial March.
Really?
So people didn't know if it was like a little tip of the hat to...
Which he also plays an Imperial officer.
Yeah.
That's crazy that Walter Donovan and Vogel, the Nazi, are both still alive. Michael Byrne and Julian Glover. And,
well, what about the fact that Walter Donovan, he's a bad guy in Indiana Jones, Star Wars, James Bond.
Game of Thrones.
To be a bad guy in all those franchises, that's pretty cool.
I know. I mean, until Mads Mikkelsen came along.
I know.
Who's now a bad guy in virtually every franchise. James Bond, Star Wars, he's quite a bad guy.
Should we write a Mads Mikkelsen vehicle where he's the protagonist?
Yeah, like a kindergarten cop thing.
Yes.
Like where he's
he almost always plays a good guy in his home country, but you know. Because what else was? Is he's in Harry Potter, right? I think.
Oh, wow.
Indiana Jones.
Shit, man.
The famous reboot of the Clash of the Titans franchise.
Of course.
Clash
of
the Titans and Wrath of the Titans.
My favorite 3D movie.
the other thing, too, I watched this and I was like thinking about when Donovan is aging rapidly and turns into a skeleton, and then all that's left of him is a Nazi pin. it's like this little swastika thing.
I was like,
what about his wife who at the beginning wanted him to come back to the party? Who's going to tell her?
I think she's
that's right.
She's better off. She's getting a ton of money.
I want a post credits, like airplane type of sequence of the guy in the taxi cab with her at the dinner party waiting for Donovan to show up.
No, it's impossible. He hated the Nazis.
I like extrapolating these things too, because I would love it in the new Indiana Jones. It's 1969, and theoretically, Indy could go back to Alexandretta or wherever that is and visit the knight. He's still in that place, just living there.
I sort of assume that, like, once the Grail went down in the hole, the knight was sort of like,
all right, I wondered I'll about that. Just because he can't drink from it, he's waving like, thanks. I mean, I kind of appreciate what you did because this has been miserable, but also you fucked me.
So it was nice to see you.
Yeah, what's going to happen? Like, what's assumed? Yeah, he goes back there, a big rock falls on his head, and he's like, hey, thanks.
Yeah, what is his outcome?
But
Joseph
also, like,
of Arimathea?
Here's another thing. Is there a way where could the story have gone Donovan successful at getting the cup correct and drinks of this thing, and then, like, he just takes the seal with him? everywhere he goes.
That's yeah. a real like loophole.
He just travels with the seal.
That's a real loophole.
Lays it down on the red carpet.
Or, you know, he turns that temple into like a very swanky modern apartment.
There. That's probably more likely.
Cool. Yeah.
Gets running water, electricity.
And then like when you exit, because it's not like as soon as you exit, it's not like you age immediately.
We don't
know.
You
just resume normal aging. No, you know, because Dr. Jones.
Oh, right.
You know, Henry Jones Sr. He drinks it and he goes out. Indiana Jones goes out too. So you know that it just like, you've stopped being immortal. Continue.
Okay. So it's like you life. Could pause as long as you're yeah. in there.
So like, could he just be like, I'm going to live here, but like, this is my like Dorian Gray sanctuary. Like mm-hmm. I'll go out for like a day every 2 years or something like that.
It's not or even year, like day to day. The other problem is you kind of are stuck in that part of the world unless you really want to get around for a while.
Yeah. But I mean, I'd take a week off my immortal life.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? I'd chance it.
You're also going to lose everybody you love. That would be tough.
Well, I mean, he could bring his wife over, you know.
Yeah.
And it's the least he could do.
I would say new friends every 50 years. That kind of sounds fun.
Yeah, that's true.
That does actually sound
but
fun.
Don't you become
imagine
like
the
vampire
podcasts we'd be doing.
You become so cynical and jaded and world weary that no one wants to be friends with you. You know?
Yeah, that's funny. Imagining him like if he's still in the little cavern and he's doing his own like solo like live vlog.
So he's active on social media, Walter
Donovan.
Don't forget
to hit the bell. Comment below.
Just bad lighting.
Which cup do you think is the cup of a carpenter?
He's still a Nazi, even though the war
is long gone. The 80s were officially over, though, guys, with that cup. The fact that it's not blinged out and it's a basic cup. Right. I think if that had been made in the Temple of Doom, Fortune and Glory days, that right. cup would have been just huge.
With an American flag
with jewels,
on it.
There's jewels yeah. inside the cup.
When with you a koozie. Ronald Reagan koozie or just do it.
You know, I was raised Catholic, and that is, I think, a Catholic fantasy is the like, oh yeah, the crummiest cup. It's like the same. It's like the same reason.
It's also, yeah.
I love Chicago. Torturous. Chicago's a big Catholic town. They love the Cubbies. They never win. It's the cup. It's the same thing. It's like a lot.
That's so funny because I had no religious upbringing until it hit my family later. So I actually learned about what the Ark was, what the Holy Grail was from these movies. I had no idea That's what funny. These things were. Isn't that crazy?
Yeah.
And the Shankara stones. Can you believe I didn't know what those were?
We were taught that very early.
Yeah. In Sunday school.
CCA, we'd just be like, okay.
What? Can you tell me more about the Dial of Destiny?
Well, as far as the belief thing then goes, so like I noticed that opening class, he says truth is different than fact. Mm-hmm. And he says, you know, oh, I know this bedtime story. Are they trying to like, and it's cool, is it like framed that this is indie, you know, like people slag on it and he's like, oh, every time he's back not believing.
Yeah.
But I think it is the movie's way of trying to give nuance. It's like he does know fantastical things can happen, but like the way the Holy Grail story is told, he thinks is kind of bullshit. And that's like what the fact is different than true. Like, right. Or do you think it is? He just kind of goes back to zero again and he's
after
solo.
This one, it's tough to buy that he doesn't believe in this shit because he saw his dad be healed by holy water in the Holy Grail.
He also met a 700-year-old knight.
But I mean, at the beginning of Crusade, before he goes on it, when he's teaching those students in the beginning, does he think...
When he's already been possessed.
Yeah.
But don't you think there's an element...
Seen the Ark of the Covenant.
Yeah.
Of him going like, I'm such a skeptic. I can't expect these kids to believe this. And I also don't want to teach them that. Even if he believes what he saw, he's probably very cautious about what he represents, you know?
And it's different than from what his dad believes. His dad seems to believe in like a spiritual element.
Yeah, he seems very, very like old school.
Yeah, he slaps him across the face.
Religious. Yeah, right.
Yeah, that's the most whatever, Greatest Generation versus Boomer moment the Indiana Jones movies. It's like, it's like a seat straight from Dad, that Jack Lemmon, Ted Danson movie that Spielberg produced. God,
yeah.
It has that same sort of...
Well, this one has a lot of... When Indy's about to make the leap of faith and they cut back to Sean Connery going, believe, believe. And I mean, this one really has a, like, not only is God real, but the Christian Bible's...
I mean, leave it to Spielberg to finally justify Christianity.
As a Jew.
As one of the world's greatest...
I guess it's Old Testament.
Jewish people.
Old Testament Jew, but...
I was walking with my son in the neighborhood. And one of these little Orthodox kids scooting by. And he goes, excuse me, are you Jewish? And I go, no, but he is. And he goes, he is? I'm like, yep. And then we just kept walking.
Was he asking, like, because... He
they
was
always
like, because,
ask. They
because
always
I am a Jew and I want
to... Yeah, they need to do a mitzvah, you know.
Oh, yeah. I see.
Oh.
You know, the father-son stuff in this is like... I love it. It touches, but like, it's a little too goopy for me.
Wow.
I'm sorry. Wow. Like, I just got to speak truth here. When we saw Raiders together, the three of us saw it in the theater, I was like, what I loved about it was just like, it was so stripped down and like raw. Mm-hmm. And I would say even in its feelings, it's a little softer. Which is fine. But also in the, like, the way it's made, you know, like that boat scene at the beginning, that's pretty bad. That's like, it looks like a stage show thing at a theme park.
Oh, yeah.
Sure.
And then when they go, like, to the apartments in Europe and stuff, it's all stages when, like in Raiders, all the windows are open. You're seeing, like, real life city street. I just feel like...
It's got a Jedi feel that they kind of stripped it down a little bit.
I love the movie. It's so good. It's better than any most movies, but I just like the feeling that they got something to prove, I feel like is gone. Like,
I'm with you on that. In fact, my weak spot in this movie is the knight sequence at the end. When he comes in and there's just an old knight who's been alive this entire time saying, hi, how are you? It does lose me. And it does take me out this time because I did watch it from an adult point of view, which is probably not a good idea. I love the movie too, but it gets...
Well, and then I end
goofy.
Up like arguing for stuff that people hate, like in Temple of Doom, you know, those action sequences get too wild.
Yeah.
But I'm like, I wish there was one sequence in this that went bonkers. Mm. Like they're all a little...
I think the most bonkers thing in Last Crusade is the German officer shaking his fist at the Hindenburg.
I love
it's that. The stupidest looking shot in any movie that's ever existed. Like, even the way he's holding his fist isn't like how you would hold it. It's
I love that actor so much.
It's kind of
so
like
much.
Turned this way.
That guy that ILM blue screen stuff that was at
they
the time.
They were overtaxed that summer because they had to do the effects for everything that was coming out.
Back to the Future 2 and stuff. And then goes, wow,
two.
Shit. Yeah, because that and you know what? It's like one of those things that my eye loves it. Like the plane thing. I know that's blue screen, but I like how that looks.
Well, and you wonder if that's an aesthetic choice by ILM.
Well, you never used to see that well lit and overexposed blue screen.
Right.
So
it's going to
look
time.
Strange.
That
but
shot,
I like
that
it
shot
too.
of the pilot going by them driving is practical. Did you know that?
Yeah.
That's awesome. Yeah.
Like, like watching them on the set and they're like wheeling the plane. Going by. I'm like, this is
amazing.
Fucking wild.
Oh, I had, when watching this and the practical effects, I found a new argument, guys, for why practical special effects are better than CGI. You guys ready for it?
Yeah. Convince me.
Remember when we were kids, part of the fun of watching these special effects movies was figuring out how they did each one was its own different trick.
Mm-hmm.
When you're a kid now, you just go, oh, computers.
Yeah.
The fun of rewatching going like, oh, that.
Even like when a filmmaker does it practically, on purpose. Like, people still don't even know that it's practical because they just assume that it's like,
I know. So with you, when you're like, the tail fin of that plane is all squibbed up, but then they cut back to a real plane and it's got like painted on holes. And I love that kind of the seams in that.
What about, what about the miniature tank they threw over the edge?
Yeah.
With the tiny weighted German guy on top.
I know. I love that.
And then when the lid falls off, you can't see inside. It's got the little peg.
The turret falls off, but then they cut back to it a little bit later and the turret's back on.
Yeah, well.
Yeah.
You know. I like it when that guy's going down. It's like, yeah! The sound in this is so good. I love just this like rich ILM sound of like things being shot and metal screeching.
Metal screeching in this movie. This is why I always put this movie on to test any sound system in high school when I was like.
It's the best use of the Wilhelm scream, I think.
Oh, yeah. Just that guy falling off the little rock.
Yeah, because like that's a situation where I believe that scream.
Yeah. Those metal screeches when the ship blows up off the coast of Portuguese and you just hear before it blows up.
Off the coast of Portuguese people? Uh-huh. Portugal, not Portuguese.
Right.
Off the coast of Portuguese. That's very funny.
Off the coast of Portuguese, near the coast of Spanish.
Yeah. Do you think that the scene, I mean, the sound is great overall, but like there's a couple times where the mix, I'm just like, really, guys, we're going to do that? Where like it's the boat scene and the repeller's going.
I love it.
But still the punch is louder than everything. Yes.
It's so selective.
I love the rat scene. Like, this is perfect. It's like what movie sound is like when he goes, ugh, rats. But you don't hear the rats until the camera goes to them.
Yeah.
Like that's somehow so a magic microphone is attached to the lens and it only like, picks up sound that's right in front of it.
Anytime you look through a scope or binoculars in a film, when you start to hear the things on the other side.
Same with when he gets on the horse and runs away and then the cars come up. You don't hear the cars until
it's perfect. I mean, I love it. It's I want to be tricked. Along with the sound though. Holy cow, John Williams, the score with the, you know, I know I told you I love the boat chase scene, but I love the little like Viennese,
the mandolin waltz or whatever
like that he adds to that. And when you hire a boy, Johnny Williams, you know that he on his own, he's going to come up with like five different, the fact that he just comes up with a new theme for the Holy Grail when he could have easily just repeated the Ark of the Covenant thing. Right.
J-Dub gets it, you know?
Oh, he's awesome. The best.
So good. Best. Yeah. But the, what other
what
music?
Do you think of, what do you think of Allison Duty?
You know what? I never name, quite questioned her when I was younger, but this time when they had their first little flirtatious scene when they arrive in Venice, I always took it as they were almost quoting something because they say it so by rote.
Oh, it's like a spy. It's like spy language.
But it's not, though.
I know.
That's the weird thing, but they're delivering it that way. And then I'm thinking, wait a minute. I don't think they are saying lines that they know. They're supposed to just extemporaneously be witty like this, which is great. But they are both delivering it with such kind of like robotic speech.
In the same thing of like, there's just points where I was like, it just doesn't feel alive. For me, it was like when at the top, when the guy's like, come on, kid, you know that train, that thing. I'm like, they were like, you know what? It's good. The train looks good. It's moving fast. Like whatever, like not going back to get like, but the same with that. It's like, but you know, it's funny with that scene when she goes like, you have your father's eyes and you have my mother's.
And my mother's ears. Yeah. But the rest is yours.
Yeah. I was watching with my wife, Leslie, and she said, I did this joke for you, meaning me. And then she said, you can tell the podcast about it too. Cause it cracked me up.
That's nice.
So when she went, you have your father's eyes. My wife Leslie went, and you have my mother's pussy hair. And I laughed so hard and she went, that was for you. and then she was like, and you can tell the guys on the podcast. I said that.
If I had my way, I might recast Allison Duty and Julian Glover. I just don't think he's the greatest villain.
Well, I was thinking about it. They have the tough thing of my Belloc's going to be my boy from beginning to end.
Yeah.
My Belloc.
Because when he's doing it, it's his villainy is seductive, and it's always going back and forth between like, you know what, this guy could maybe convince me to go to his side. And then the second one, just flat out bad. There's no possibility that the leader of the temple guy with the big horn.
Oh yeah, Amrish Puri, is that his name?
Molaram. Yeah, there's no like he has a good moment. So this is like they do it where it's like the heel turn, right, or whatever. Yeah. So they're good, and the reverse heel, but like they're good, and then they get bad. Once you reveal somebody who is good is now bad, then it's kind of like, well, if they show any signs of being good, it kind of mixes up the turn. So now they're just kind of left after that turn. But that was the first time a true plot twist worked on me when I was a kid. When it was revealed, when she took the book from him and backed off, I knew plot twists like, oh, Joker's revealed to be Jack Napier who killed Bruce. But that would just kind of hit me like, okay, that's plot information. Yeah. This was the first time I remember being like, oh, I've been had.
Gotcha.
Who could you put in those two roles that,
time?
I love him as Vogel, but Michael Byrne as Donovan would work for me too. I just love that actor so much.
The guy who's like,
well, this is how we say goodbye in Germany.
Yeah. He actually would have, but would have been problem is as soon as he shows up talking about the Grail in the first scene, you'd be like, this guy's bad dude. Right.
But he's played good guys before. Like he plays a sweet old man in Apt Pupil.
Yeah. Maybe he could. Ooh, Nazi.
Apt Pupil.
This guy, all he plays is Nazi. He's in Force 10 from Navarone as a Nazi.
Wow.
But he was a Jew that recognizes a Nazi in Apt Pupil. He's also in Smiley's People, the old John le Carré story. So check it out.
And then what about the girl?
Allison Duty.
Allison Duty is Irish, which I didn't even know until I was watching some like behind the scenes thing last night.
Yeah.
And then I was like, I've seen her before. Where have I seen her?
Oh, and she's also in the Pierce Brosnan movie with the bad acting.
Taffin. Here it is. Ready, everybody?
As long as I'm living here, it is. Then maybe you shouldn't be living here.
Oh, my God. And she's Jenny Flex in View to a Kill.
Oh, so that was the first true... Wait, when did he play a Bond villain, Julian Glover? Or was that Never Seen...
It was For Your Eyes Only in 1980?
So these are two big Bond pulls, too.
Yeah, we should also mention today, June 6th is the 40th anniversary of the release of Octopussy today.
Hey guys, congrats.
Thanks for celebrating.
We got here.
Yeah.
I'm excited about that because Octopussy, as we all know, is my favorite movie to just throw on in the background.
It's so good. Who's your girls that you could like the actresses in 89 that
would work as both
Austrian
a Nazi and a not Nazi? A Nazi?
I
don't...
Oh. She'd be too big for this. But like a Michelle Pfeiffer?
I don't know. I mean,
Michelle Pfeiffer would
they
work.
Got Connery.
But maybe that's too... Once he got two superpowers.
Also, Pfeiffer's still 2 years away from being Catwoman.
Yeah.
Could she do a... convincing German accent.
I think she could.
You do.
Yeah. Well, she was in Music Box. And that's like about my dad is a Nazi war criminal. So maybe she has some
double feature that with Apt Pupil.
A lot of Nazis. One thing I do like about watching this movie is how doubled down Sean Connery and Harrison Ford are on how bad Nazis are, which is like such a welcome thing to see nowadays.
Big time. It's like,
oh, good.
I didn't expect that to age better.
Yes. That's very easy side to take.
I'm not hearing there's good people on both sides. The scum of humanity is more like
it. and then having, it's the best choice of the movie of having Sean Connery's character be behind the eight ball and not be an action star is just like the most endearing stuff in the movie. So, it's funny when Indiana Jones is like, don't call me Junior, and he shoots three yeah. Nazi soldiers and his reaction is like, oh, my son takes souls. I was thinking, though, those soldiers who get a phone call to their families and their son gets the news that their dad is dead. Sure. It's like, oh, my dad is gone forever. Who killed him? A father and son.
Archaeologists. Two father and son archaeologists.
It's okay. Your dad was a Nazi. He deserved to go.
That's like... The kid's like, oh, right. Oh, that's so fucked up. Or that's a Nazi.
I do. I mean, it's interesting watching this with all the Nazi imagery in it and like Hitler showing up for a cameo.
Yeah. Forrest Gump style, kind of like this like funny.
But at least they didn't try to put him in with real footage like Forrest Gump.
That would have been amazing.
Colorize.
Ted Turner style.
I like Adolf showing up in this. If he had just remained sort of like this, like, that sounded so weird.
Love it.
Like, first name basis, huh, Paul?
I didn't mean it that way. I don't, there's something that kind of like, I like him as like Vera in Cheers. It's like this thing that in the Indiana Jones movies, this like.
We'll never see her.
Also just because I like how the villains use Although we Hitler, see he is a bitch in these movies. Like the villains never are like, I agree with Hitler. They're always like, businessmen, or they seek their own glory.
Opportunists,
opportunists. That's the word I'm using.
Because there's no evidence that Donovan supports the ideology of the Nazis. He just wants the Grail,
right?
Yeah,
and same with Elsa. Not to defend her.
I think we should.
She's, you know, she's sad about the book burning. But she's, you know, complicit for sure.
Yeah, it's different than, right, if they were facing a villain who believed in the...
She was just like, you know, she's out there at her Florida book burning, crying a little bit.
Yeah.
The autograph scene, right? So that goes into...
Do the replicas of the Grail... diary.
It's a good question.
Adolf Hitler signature.
That's a good question.
Are they from pre-Adolf Hitler signature? Like, what point of the movie are they from?
Yeah, and like, what state is the rubbing in? Is it
half
rubbed or full rubbed?
That's a great question.
Who has the Who has that little book? I wonder. That's
a good.
The original?
Yeah.
Oh,
that is
gosh.
Cool.
Might still be in the Lucas archives.
Damn, to flip through that would be so fun.
Well, they make you can buy replicas of it.
Yeah, you can buy like a photocopied sort of shitty replica of it on Amazon for like $30, or you can go on like Etsy and there's like a couple people that make these incredible ones that are like $900.
I gotta say, in the fan world of Indiana Jones cosplay, most of them always miss the mark a little bit. Like an Indiana Jones costume always has a little bit of a
partially because it's the body that it's on, you know.
But even still,
I think
when it's
the
like
colors never are right. Or
I just mean like Harrison Ford.
Like one of those pro cosplay people, like that, like one of those people that like will do a Superman, but like also be jacked. Like it's one of those guys. It still looks weird.
Yeah, it definitely does. Yeah.
The hat never is exactly right.
Right. It's always
the jacket's never exactly right. The jacket always is like, I find that every time I think the jacket always has too much of an undershell.
Yep.
You know what I mean? It's like too puffy.
When you see that costume on someone else, it's when you realize that the real costume is Ford. I mean, that's the face. If you don't have that face,
it hangs on him.
At the Indiana Jones Stunt Spectacular, sometimes I can suspend disbelief.
Kind of squint.
You know? You've seen that.
Oh, sure.
It's really, I still don't even, the avoiding of the spikes in the floor. To me is magical.
Yeah.
Still to this day.
Yeah. Stunt work at theme parks, that has to be top.
It's been running continuously since 1989.
Yeah.
Damn.
I think that came out a year after the studio opened. It's like 90. But it hasn't, it's the only like original thing left of the park.
Wow.
Weren't
they going to take it down and they decided not to?
No, all they did was they just covered the swastikas. Which is like, I'm like,
yeah,
whatever. Why are we doing this, guys?
I know that
let's
is
not ignore. Let's not ignore. I know, like,
let's
happening.
Learn a lesson. Yeah.
Are they? And they're refurnishing the ride at Disneyland now.
Ride at Disneyland is done.
Oh, it is.
Yeah, it's back up.
New tricks and
a lot
treats.
Of restored effects.
Mm-hmm.
projections are better, etc. I'm looking for, I haven't ridden it. Every time I go, the wait's too long. But
yeah, I think it's my next to Splash Mountain, my favorite ride at Disneyland.
Splash Mountain's closed now.
For good?
Yeah.
Well, it's getting redone.
It's going to be Tiana's Bayou Adventure.
I heard Splash Mountain, that name came from because Michael Eisner and Jeffrey Katzenberg were big on the movie Splash.
Correct.
And so they were just looking for any
synergy,
way to get the...
yes.
But then that it's bookended with Little Mermaid. Those guys really wanted to fuck some fish.
Couple of fish fuckers.
Yeah, come on, guys.
I don't doubt it, honestly. There's some weird shit going on.
Stop telling on yourselves.
During the Disney decade.
Can we take a pee break?
Yeah, sure. I mean, if you need it.
Hey,
you guys can keep talking.
We bring up fish effing, and this guy's like, hey, I need a little
going to go check release. Out my 12-gallon aquarium. But if you guys want
to have to.
Okay, all we'll right, be right back.
This is just me, guys.
James Bonding Podcast.
We're back.
We're back. The hat is back.
The hat is back.
So, you guys have peed.
Yeah.
I haven't. And I feel good about that.
I think it's cool.
Only one of us doesn't have a drink in front of them. Just saying.
Oh, that's true.
That's, yeah. Mm-hmm.
I'm having a limoncello LaCroix.
There's a deleted scene where Sala meets Indy and Professor Jones at the train station.
Oh.
Yeah. And I'm like, that scene is I kind of need that scene.
I was wondering how they got from point A to
yep,
point B.
I wondered that too.
Yeah.
There's also a little the deleted thing, I think, when the boys pick up Indy and take him to Donovan. I think there's more of a tussle.
Oh, really?
Yes. And like one a of them fight pulls fighter? A gun. One of them yeah. pulls a gun. Which I'm glad they cut out because you would know immediately that the Donovan guy was no good.
Yep. Yeah. Yeah. You'd have to go back and forth. You'd have to go really bad. Oh, no good. And then stretch that out until you find out. Yeah.
It would be too much.
Yeah.
There's a deleted scene where he goes on a little bit of a tangent journey to get Stalin, Mussolini, and Hirohito's autographs. Yeah.
So you could.
He just keeps turning corners. And,
yeah.
And dictators take books from him to sign.
He's pacing outside Stalin's hotel.
What do you think of pencil
And then he comes
guy?
Out. He's like, yeah. hey, Stalin.
A young Fidel Castro. Why do you want this? You'll see.
Do you think the pencil guy, the guy that hands the pencil to Adolf, do you think I think he oversold it. I think he, as far as specific acting goes, I think he was a little...
I mean, how do you upstage Hitler?
Because he was
it's
like
not easy.
He also was like seemed to be like annoyed that he. But you're Hitler's pencil boy. Yeah. Like, why would you be annoyed?
Hitler's
now?
Pencil boy. I was a Hitler's pencil boy. A play in two acts.
I knew it was wrong, but I just held the pencil.
There's also, I guess, a little deleted part helped answer something for me, which is when he does the little test at the end, you know, when he falls through the J thing. I always thought it was weird when he pulls himself out. He's going, It's like, you just fell through a hole. I don't know why you're brushing stuff off your... And it's because before it was like spiders came out of the hole. He didn't fall through. It was like you pushed down on it. Spiders. Yeah, yeah.
That's better. Because... Wait, well, for one thing, just the like physics construction of this thing, there are cells.
Just make one of paper mache.
I know, but these are thin stones that are supported by nothing in the center.
No, it's a grid. It's all triangles, the strongest structure known to engineering. No,
yeah, but you can't have cellular then, like, structures grid, like that.
So it's like a honeycomb.
No.
You know? Oh, so it's like one of those like beanbag couch games where you throw it on the tic-tac-toe and it spins around.
Some of them's filled in, some of them aren't.
Give me the spiders anytime.
Yeah, because in your mind, it's more like it'd be
but
better if it's kind of like...
decapitation to spiders.
Poisonous Satan spiders.
Yeah, but like
you're right, and they've already done tarantulas.
Spiders.
Yeah,
were they spiders or tarantulas?
They were tarantulas.
Yeah,
again.
Yeah,
and they already
and that's
did
not gonna
rats.
Top right. rats for that brief of a moment.
It should have been like lava.
Yeah, something unseen, especially since until
they gotta Crystal ground spoke. It somewhat in reality. I know he's walking to see a 700-year-old man, but.
Well, I was wondering, you know, with all the, each one has a creature. right? Snakes and or a critter or a gross thing.
Ants.
Bugs and ants and rats in this.
Yeah.
For these first three, if you had to be the actor in it,
yeah,
what would your order of preference be?
I would
not character, but actor working.
Yeah,
at
yeah,
that.
Yeah. I would assume
I'd go rats, snakes, bugs, I think.
But I would assume that the snakes would be fake.
Not all of them were. And did you read the rats were bred for this movie?
Yeah.
Because they didn't want diseased rats. So they had like thousands of rats that were solely bred.
My order would be rats, bugs, snakes.
One of my jobs in my teen college years was working at a place called Charles River Laboratories that bred rats with various diseases for medical testing.
Ooh.
My favorite were the fat diabetic rats. They were like the cutest and laziest. But like
cute little cheeks.
They'd all be in these like giant incubators, like sealed air. Like you have to put your arms in to like to handle the feeding and like so on and so forth. So rats don't bother me that much. So given all the options, I would take rats.
And so we all agree rats would be the first thing.
We're not putting fire ants in this. I think I
know.
We'll
wait for fire ants when we get to Crystal Skull.
Okay.
Then we'll reorder.
Because I think I also, I won't say it, but I think I know what the creature is in the new one. And it.
The clap.
It's the 69. It's the way
it's
go.
Just crabs.
Summer of love.
Crabs. I hate these guys.
Why did it have to be crabs?
Again. Oh my God.
You think we're talking about the venereal disease? It's just Indy in a room full of actual crabs. Secret.
Sala, throw down the penicillin.
What if it's something like really wild, like midichlorians?
Oh. Oh my God.
But yeah, rats seem like they'd be easy. But bugs, I could see bugs being like not fun because you don't know where they're going at all times. But snakes are just like too, they have like fucking no remorse or like moral code. Like
snakes
bugs,
you think bugs do?
Bugs, I think bugs are just like, I eat a leaf. I put up the stick to build a little home for my other bug friends.
We must protect the queen.
Yeah, a rat is just, or a snake is just like, I'm hungry. Don't piss me off. I strike. If you didn't even know you were walking along, it's just like, Jesus.
What about that giant water snake?
Also,
like, what world, this circus, why does the circus need 1,000 snakes in a case? Like, four cases of snakes? Like, what is this?
It looked like a water eel
snake. What
part
of the act is this?
Yeah, good question.
Yes!
Like, why would we? Why?
At the grand finale of the circus, like, a tank of snakes.
Yeah, but also it's like the reptile. Oh, here, welcome to the reptile tent. I want to see some snakes.
Take a snake,
here's
leave a 40, snake.
40,000 of them.
Straight from the well of souls.
Bill, we got to do something about these snakes. It's eating up half the budget.
But that just made me think the propellers are a big death instrument in this,
right?
Because the birds.
Oh, sure.
And then with the guy with what you were talking about, the loud sound of the.
And in Raiders, too, you know, the big German guy gets chopped up by a propeller.
Yeah.
That guy who's in all three movies we've mentioned before.
What do you guys think of the fake giraffe heads?
Not great.
I think it might be the worst effect in the movie. Because it just seems like there's like a guy who's going.
Yeah.
Siri. Yes.
So I pantomimed Siri.
God, if you just want to be on the podcast, say so. My God.
I think the rhino horn, is also pretty wonky.
Yeah, that whole opening sequence is, I like it and then I don't. I like the River Phoenix of it all, but the.
No.
It just gets a little corny, I think, you know?
Yeah. Corny, I think, is like.
I've silenced
it. It's the first time, corn is a little bit in these movies because it's like the first one is just all action. The second one is like crazy.
Yeah. This one's just a little soft. This movie's a little soft.
You get like the one guy that seems like he's a Native American, you know, who is.
Oh, I love that gang.
The very white guy with a wig on.
Who looks like he's a fucking.
I can't
newsy.
Stand that kid.
So,
I'm Tigger.
It's so the cover of like a Hardy Boys.
Oh my
like,
God.
Yeah,
that's great.
I love
like,
it.
It's
I love
spectacularly,
it.
The characterization of all three of them are, it's like, and you got the dorky guy.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Dorky guy with the glasses. And then you have the cool Indiana Jones type who leads them.
Yeah.
Like the gang of idiots.
And then the guy they're working for is too, that cool guy, that little Panama Jack sort of dude.
Yeah.
Do you know what's funny is like, I think honestly today, or not yesterday, last night was the first time I noticed that it's the same guy.
Oh, really?
Yes.
Uh-huh. It's crazy. He knows who Indy is though. He's like, this is the second time I've had to take this back from you. You recognized him from.
But it's like also like what,
30 years ago?
What? What were you doing with the cross? Why did you have it on your boat? Like, did he need that? And like, he kept it on him at all times?
I feel like I used to know the answer to this because I, you know, at the time of this movie, read the novelization for this movie. That's when I told you that in that novelization, Indy has a tingle on the back of his neck when he senses danger, like a Spidey sense.
That makes sense. I'm okay with that.
Yeah. Yeah. What? Any other things in the book?
Not that I can't remember anything else. It's, you know, I read it in 89 probably or 90.
I mean, his inherent superpower should be enough. I think that's pretty spectacular.
I think we talked previously, you know, how this has the funniest cut of the, like with Brody. Like,
oh, yeah.
You know, if anything, he's already found the grail and then because so
he's got a 2-day head start. He speaks 12 languages.
he'll blend in. You'll never
and
see
he's
him
so funny. And I love that.
Does anyone speak English?
He's got a chicken feather on his cheek.
Face. Yeah.
Oh,
and then
man.
When he meets up with Sala, that's cool too. Cause it's like, hey, these guys never even met before.
Oh, that's
the old
right.
gang is coming together.
But Father of Indy. I love when he calls it that. Father of Indy.
When we watched Raiders, and it's cool though, Brody, Marcus Brody, right?
Yeah.
Has a kind of more of a paternal side.
And pretty serious. Straight.
Yeah, it seems like they had to make him a little bit more of a clown in this one, because if he was paternal and in scenes with Sean Connery, they'd be like, hey, dude, I'm the real dad here.
But I like the background that they're friends, that Professor Jones and Brody are friends.
I think Brody's the kind of stealth MVP of this movie. He's like, so funny.
Yeah. Well, in a movie where you're having to like
museum?
Bring a lot of different things together.
Yeah.
Which if you think, you know, the first two are way more propulsive because it's one thing and everybody's after the thing. Yeah. And this is sort of like at points they're trying to get the dad, and then at another point they're trying to find where Brody is and get Brody. Like the it's hard for me to sometimes but I guess it's what you were saying. It's like the metaphor of like it's not the grail, you know. It's
I swear to God I'm gonna kill Siri. Fucking kill her.
Siri's actually the person who's replaced that guy in the little whole room at the end there, the knight.
Siri of Arimathea.
Yeah, that'd be cool if they replace it with just some sort of like weird like AI all new, like the guy in the white room in Matrix.
Like I would like some sort of steampunk robot.
I like an
yes.
iPad on wheels like they have at some Johnny Rockets now or Ruby's, whatever it is, that comes up to like
self-checkout.
Yeah. Welcome to the Holy Grail showroom.
Powered by Square. Please tip. I'm just buying merchandise. Why am I tipping?
Oh, and you mentioned that motorcycle chase being extra shoots. If people want to check it out on YouTube, there is, it's pretty rare that Spielberg lets people on set for making of stuff to actually see how he does it. But I know it's like European and Japanese making of crews get more access. And I think it's partly why people do commercials or endorsements. It's like, well, people in America won't see this, so it's not spoiling something. But now on YouTube, these things come over. And there's a really amazing, like, 10-minute thing of just seeing how Spielberg sets up everything for the...
oh, really?
When the guys get knocked off the motorcycle and land together and stuff, you see him setting that up. But people should check that out. There's also that crazy... There's a Japanese documentary where a guy talks to Stanley Kubrick, asks him what the end of 2001 is on the phone. And Stanley Kubrick just says it. He just lays it out.
What does he say?
You guys want to know?
Yeah.
He's like, oh, that guy at the end, when he goes to the white room, the idea is like, it's a zoo and it's an exhibit where you would take an animal and put it in a jungle, but you would kind of take all these different things from the jungle for one room. So that's why it's got like art and beautiful furniture, but it might not all fit together time-wise. And he's basically coming in and seeing his zoo exhibit self at the end.
Oh, shit.
Yeah.
Wow. But,
that room's pretty cool. That was at the exhibit.
Yeah.
LACMA.
Yeah, that'd be a cool little like hotel.
Oh, yeah.
Oh,
zoo.
Yeah.
You get to stay in the...
Also, the space station, if you could go stay there.
Disney should redo the Star Wars hotel now that they're closing
They're already closing it.
I know.
Why?
Because they priced it too high and they weren't selling enough.
And the overhead is too high because they had so many actors.
They're paying actors to work 48-hour shifts, essentially.
Jeez.
Like, do you think they go home and sleep?
I have no idea.
I really do wonder about that. Like, do the cast members of the Galactic Star Cruiser go home to sleep and then drive back in and then get in the costume again?
No idea. On that reshoot, though, it's interesting because that was a reshoot. They did it in Northern California, and I feel like you can immediately tell the topography is the oak trees of California and stuff, you know.
Yeah.
Barely green enough to seem like Germany.
It's the beauty of Skywalker Ranch.
I know.
It's a magical place.
Also didn't know that Tom Stoppard seems to have been responsible for most of the dialogue in this movie. He did an uncredited rewrite, and Spielberg said that pretty much all the dialogue is his, and it's such snappy dialogue. That's why I'm kind of bummed that the little exchange between Elsa and Indy isn't more deftly handled, because it's so classic, like golden age of cinema, romantic comedy dialogue. I would love to see, you know, two people really believably giving that, you know, like how Bond and Vesper do their first scene in the train.
The best
so
line
good.
Of dialogue, I think, in the entire film is, I'm sorry, son, they got us.
Yeah.
We talked about that.
I still laugh.
So funny.
Every time. The delivery of that is amazing.
I would say the dialogue and writing is like way better. I mean, the Temple of Doom, I think, is the thing that's most lacking.
Temple of Doom still feels
like
an aberration to me. It still feels like this weird other.
Even with just of the original three?
Yeah.
Yeah, although if you took it out and you had just Raiders and Last Crusade, I think you would really feel the distance between those two, because one is so, I wouldn't say grounded, but I don't, cohesive, where this one just feels so distinctly a romp, a lighthearted romp.
Yes.
It's missing some of the stakes.
It's
a
little like
the
Jedi thing, though. You know, I'm not the first person to make the comparison that it's like, oh, you bring back the Death Star.
Yeah.
You bring back the Nazis.
It's what Goldfinger did too. Just lock all the things down and give me the best hits, basically.
And, you know, Jedi people will make the complaint of like, it's a forest. It's not Cloud City. A forest is like something we have on Earth. A Cloud City is a little more imaginative. With this, like the fact that the opening set piece and the last set piece are kind of in similar geographic terrains. They're both kind of like rocky desert mountain canyon areas.
Yeah.
I wish there was some other look in this. You know what I mean? Like some action sequence had some sort of, I guess the airplane stuff. I love that.
No, I'm with
it's
you
the
that,
first,
but, yeah.
outside of when the raft goes down, Spielberg's like flying sequences are always amazing.
Yeah.
So the fact that you get a real deal flying stunt show in this is very cool.
It's just all warm climate in this, basically.
The guy that was the
except for the
airplane
castle.
Mechanic that got in the fist fight with Indy and Raiders, and then he was one of the guards in Temple of Doom. He was also in this.
Yeah, he's
in the blimp, but they cut the scene out.
He's not in the blimp. He's down there with Vogel running towards the blimp.
No, they shot a whole scene where he's in the blimp.
Though. Yeah.
And
you see him there though in this.
He also gets in another plane to chase Indy and his father.
Whoa.
But they don't start the engines of the plane and they just fall out of the sky. They shot that. That's
funny. So that's the Boba Fett death, Return of the Jedi.
Yeah,
the
Jesus. I love when Vogel turns around and sees that it's Indy in the like waiter suit, and that double take he gives where his face just, you see it register, yeah, and his whole face changes expression.
Oh, my favorite moment, I think, of just like quiet moment is the, and then they repeat it in Crystal Skull in a really cute way, but like when Indy is happy about how he did it, then he looks to his dad, yeah, and his dad's like, tuss, tuss, tuss. They do that later then again with Indian Mutt.
Yeah.
Mutt does like a cocky, like, oh, what do you think about that? And then he gives a tisk tisk. Yeah. I wonder if they do a cocky tisk tisk in the new one. If they do, I'll scream out cocky tisk tisk.
Woo! Cocky tisk tisk! You think what anybody if the whole crowd for the Ark of the Covenant on the painting of the Ark of the Covenant? Do you think anyone's like,
I remember that, seeing this in the theater, and I remember that getting a reaction. I also have a visceral memory of the credits coming up, and it's the original Raiders font, not the Indy font. And sitting there in that theater, it really flashed back on me this time, and Utah, and going like, I remember being there as a 16-year-old going, I'm watching Indy right now.
That's
you
awesome.
Know, it's May 24th, and oh.
This is going to be us, guys, June 30th.
Yeah. We got to buy tickets.
Yeah.
Maybe we should do that today before we go.
So is this, that's good. So is that what, can we briefly just talk about kind of what,
sure.
So it's premiered at, or it's screened at Cannes.
Cannes, yeah, with two N's and E and an S, Cannes. It premiered there to a polite standing ovation.
But we should say every movie at Cannes gets a standing ovation, and
yes,
this got a 5-minute standing ovation, which sounds amazing.
This was,
but that's actually on the bad side of things.
Notably light.
And the reviews have not been great.
Yeah, and I've thought about it slightly in terms of,
can they,
are people it? So worried about now? This is the only hope I can give it,
mm-hmm,
that maybe it's good, is like people, critics have learned, ooh, it's tough to have those Phantom Menace glowing reviews still up, or even the Crystal Skull, like Indy's back reviews.
Interesting.
Are people just now a little bit more like, I don't want egg on my face. And I gotta, like, I might have just seen the Indy movie, was jazzed about it. I'm gonna try to have the scales fall from my eyes before I write the review. And so it's maybe now. I don't think that's true. I think it's probably the reviews are like indicating that the true response to the movie. But that's the one way I'm trying to like move. Also, I don't give a shit about Rotten Tomatoes stuff. Like, I'll see any movie regardless.
But it's also
of,
like,
yeah, but
the idea of like a lot of like the things I had read were, a lot of it was like discussing the direction of the action scenes.
And oh, really?
How Mangold isn't as adept as Steven Spielberg. And I'm like, no shit.
Yeah. Who is? Right.
James Mangold.
More the, I think just the attempt at humor was maybe a little bit much or something. But this movie is going to have to work pretty hard to disappoint me. I don't have a lot of expectations after the last movie. I'm at a point in my life, like this is how I was with Spectre and No Time to Die, mm-hmm, of just, This is gravy. The original three exist. It's not going to take away from them. I almost don't even care if it's bad. I'm getting a fix and a hit of Indiana Jones. He's 80 years old playing a 70-year-old. Fucking give it to me. I don't care. Like, I am here to enjoy this movie. What more could you ask for? Mm-hmm. Nobody's entitled to get this damn thing.
80 playing 70.
Yeah.
That's fascinating.
Yeah.
So does that mean he's always been 10 years younger than what he was playing?
Because he's, what, 46 or 45 when he made Last Crusade?
Mm-hmm.
Which feels right.
Yeah.
It's funny because, they try to call that out with the So Do You. This thing belongs in a museum.
Yeah.
So Do You. It's like a...
Yeah.
So Do You.
Their first hint of...
Yeah.
Explosion.
So he was... When did Crystal Skull come out? What year?
2008.
Eight. So that was 15 years ago?
Mm-hmm.
So he was
60. But there was a longer stretch between Crusade and Crystal Skull than Crystal Skull to this.
65. So he was, what was he playing?
He was 65. That's crazy to think back then everybody was like, whoa, yeah. I don't know.
Oh, for
if
sure.
you would have told them then, oh, when give he's it 15 Indiana Jones, years, when he's going to do it again.
When he's 95 and playing Indiana Jones, we'll be like, God, remember how young he looked when he was in Dial of Destiny?
And I you know, I would say there's probably a 15% chance of that.
Did you notice how I was watching it and when River Phoenix runs into Sean Connery, or the hand that is Sean Connery, I was like, oh, if this movie was made now, they would have de-aged Sean Connery and put him at the desk.
Of course.
Fucking awful. Thank God.
Well, I think this new movie,
it's some of the best Photoshop photo. When he looks at the photo of young Sean Connery with his son, I was like, finally, somebody's got their head screwed on straight. That doesn't look like shit.
Yeah.
But the and then guys, as Bond fans, that's why we're, you know, this is an offshoot of James Bonding. And in the you know, clearly they cast him as a little right. Mm-hmm. But also Connery's like coming off untouchable. He's got an Oscar. Mm. This is a
he's
huge,
back. It's the Connaissance.
And he got nominated for a Golden Globe for this one.
Now this was, I think, my first like intro of Sean Connery. So I'm like a kid who goes to like Hollywood Homicide for Josh Hartnett, and he's like, who's this Harrison Ford guy?
Sure. I went to Firewall for Paul Bettany.
But when you guys saw this, you were like, I've seen Sean Connery as James Bond.
Oh, for sure. And Untouchables and
The Presidio.
But like,
Bob Rochelle classic.
Looking at it like,
oh, we got to talk about that, by the way.
Were you looking at it like it was Indiana? Like when I watch The Rock and I assume it's James Bond, Sean Connery's character is James Bond. Uh-huh. You know, when I watch The Rock like that, there's no me assuming this is like a James Bond.
No.
Yeah.
No, but I'm aware of the actor. I was very aware of who Sean Connery was, even movies like Outland and things like that.
And they're playing again. I mean, the joke of him being like, oh my gosh, what I don't know what to do is, I guess, a joke of like, oh, James Bond is always the guy in control, so it's funny that he's got his funny little hat and glasses with his.
Apparently, there was a lot of Connery trying to get the script a little like to make Henry Jones Sr. a little more bumbling.
Yeah,
and now
he was happy to do the comedy. That's why he was on board with
that. That's awesome. The story of that he improvised the lines of "She Talks in Her Sleep."
Yes, he did.
Is that true?
That's what Brantley said in the notes, and I have no reason to doubt him.
Because then later when she goes...
Yeah, they would have had to have adapted.
When she goes like, kisses him and he's like, I like the other kiss better. Does he mean it as in, yeah, I liked it because that one at least didn't involve my head getting hit with the this is how
I think that's how that joke plays. Yeah.
It not, yeah, I know because I also enjoy being kissed. But it does now have a... Because he
improvised
that line.
No, but you're right because she does say, I can't help remembering how great it was. And he goes, yes, it was.
So, yeah.
So they definitely, okay, if that was improvised, they would have had to adapt that later.
Thank you.
If I was Allison Duty and I was on set and Sean Connery goes, she talks in her sleep, whole crew starts up laughing. If I was Allison Duty, I'd be like, okay.
You think?
I don't know. I would just kind of be like, God, Sean Connery really can't. Like, he's got to
I will say this. I remember distinctly my mom, we were watching this movie in the time it was out, and she's like, I get it. They're both very sexy men.
Of course. Of course.
Yeah.
I mean, they're the like sexiest guys of their little generations.
Yeah.
But the
12 years apart.
Yes, that's right. Yeah.
I know. That's
and given Indy's 10 years younger.
Yeah, I mean, it's 22 years right there.
You texted me the other day, just a quick Bob Rochelle update. Yeah, sure. You were golfing with a stuntman that knew him.
Yeah.
Whoa.
Yeah, I was golfing with one of our stand-ins from Goldberg's, Tommy, who I knew because I was first made aware of this, like I think like season 4, I saw him on set with a Conan the Barbarian stunt show jacket. Oh. And I was like, whoa, Tommy, what's going on? I knew he was a stuntman. But I didn't realize the extent of his tenure at Universal Studios in Hollywood. He was in Conan, Miami Vice, Terminator 2 3D, and Waterworld. He was always Crockett in Miami Vice. He was talking about like changing outfits super quick, throwing the sunglasses on and hopping in the boat to drive out and do Miami Vice when he had just done like the Wild West stunt show or something that.
Like, awesome.
It was, he's got fascinating stories.
And he knew Bob Rochelle. And what did he tell me everything?
Well, he knew, he goes, I go, as this is yesterday, I texted Matt that I was golfing with Tommy.
And so the listener knows this is, we talk about this on other podcasts, but Bob Rochelle is a stuntman that I'm obsessed with because he made me understand what comedy could be.
Yes.
Yeah. So he's a hilarious performer. He makes me crack up big time.
So,
and he's in the Presidio. That's why we're bringing this up.
I texted, man, I told him I was with Tommy and he's like, did you know Bob Rochelle? And I go, I just turned to Tommy. I go, did you know Bob Rochelle? He goes, oh, fuck yeah.
This was my response to Matt really quickly.
Having drinks at the smokehouse with Bob Rochelle.
What? Tell me everything. What kind of man was he? Was he nice?
And I did.
Course, and then he didn't text back. And then I went,
I was still golfing and had no signal.
Then I say, and also, how did he die?
Yes.
Did you get either of the answers?
Well,
was he?
Tommy couldn't remember. He remembered the memorial service, but he doesn't remember how Bob Rochelle died. So he was going to talk to some other stunt folk friends of his and find out. Mm-hmm. And I came away learning that no one ever said a bad word about Bob Rochelle.
Oh, isn't that wonderful? Nice. That made me so happy.
Yeah.
I think as long as a stuntman doesn't like kill another man in the line of work,
people are probably like, good man. Yeah, probably.
Didn't kill me.
Yeah. Why is he doing everything safe?
Shitty husband and father, but good stuntman.
Well, any other thoughts about this last? Mad Magazine called it Indiana Jones on the Last Crude Days.
Jesus. Oh, that's great. Do you remember the other?
No, I don't.
Let's imagine what they are. What's Raiders of the Lost Ark would be?
Raiders of the Lost Fart.
Raiders of the Lost Barf.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Probably Barf. They're more in the
art.
Barf.
Temple of Indiana Jones and the Temple of Doom would be the Rumple of Poop.
I'm looking them up now.
Temple of Droop. Temple of Drool. You're probably right. Yeah.
Drool is a very funny. I've said this before, I think, in live. I don't know. I don't think I've ever said it on the James Bonding Indiana Jonesing podcast. But Mad Magazine has my favorite type of setup punchline jokes that exists. It's like, person A, I went and did aerobics today and I really broke out in a sweat. Person B, from all the strenuous exercise? Person A, no, from seeing all those girls in spandex. But the like, clarification?
Answer the question.
No.
Yeah.
A silly thing.
Oh, God.
I just wish Tom Stoppard eat your heart out. If you could fucking write like that.
So, Temple of Doom. In Banana Jones and the Temple of Goons.
Oh, that's
that
good.
Actually sounds familiar to me.
That's
now,
like
now
Temple that a little. I think that's like a little weak, honestly. Yeah. And I'm going to find Raiders here.
While you're looking that up, I do remember this final shot where they literally ride off into the sunset, being in the theater, having a real sense of melancholy that this was the last I'll ever see of Indiana Jones. Because there was no young Indiana Jones at this point.
Right? Yeah. You know, a movie is so good when it starts wrapping up and you're like bummed out. And when they start like going, hey, let's go. And he goes, we named the dog Indiana. And I realize, it's wrapping up. It bums me out.
And this is also the time where there's no more Star Wars coming either. It's over. You know, there was always the rumor or the hope, but there was never, seemed like it was actually going to happen. So this was sad.
End of an era. And also George Lucas is on this run that people would probably be like, oh, this dude's lost it. He hasn't directed a movie in 12 years. It's all Howard the Duck and Tucker and Willow. Like, you'd be going to this movie, I think, much more as a, Steven's
for sure.
Spielberg movie. George Lucas is probably, it's a bit of a.
I can't believe they made that Willow series on Disney Plus.
I didn't watch it.
Like, I didn't watch it either.
I was just upset that it wasn't about the brownies.
But like, it's like, what?
I just wanted it centered on the brownies.
Oh, yeah.
Who are those guys? Kevin Pollak and
Rick. What's it? I had him on I Was There Too. Because he's in Beverly Hills Cop. What's his name?
Oh, God.
He was a real blowhard.
He's awesome. I love that guy. He's in The Informant, that Matt Damon movie. He's like really funny. Oh, God.
I forget his
name.
He's
an amazing comedian. Yeah, Stan.
Isn't it Rick something?
I don't know.
Personally, I
don't know, but I'm saying
I don't know him personally.
I can't believe they made a Willow. Like, I can't believe they were like are viable.
Wait till, do you know they're doing a Tucker, a Man in His Dream limited series for Disney Plus? It's going to be amazing.
A revival franchise is Willow's the one people are longing for. It's like no one cared.
Yeah.
But okay, yeah. Raiders was called Raiders of the of a Lost Art.
Oh, I said art.
You did.
So
you did indeed.
Hmm. Huh. But okay. I thought that was too...
It's a little weak.
Highfalutin.
Yeah.
Art.
Well, we finished the original trilogy.
We sure did. Next. Two more to go, guys.
I know. Is that crazy that this is the tent pole now? The Last Crusade? You'd think that last shot, them riding off in the sunset, but that's actually a big old stick in the center of the tent.
I know. It's just the hump movie.
It's the Empire.
It's the Wednesday.
I encourage our listeners to look up David Ehrlich's review of Kingdom of the Crystal Skull, because I really find it offers a unique perspective on that movie. And I think it helps the movie if you read that.
I also heard Crystal Skull now in Disney Plus has the color stuff. It looks different. The thing you didn't like, the saturation levels and stuff, that's been changed, I guess.
Oh, really?
The 4K setup stuff.
Oh,
so you might also like that.
Oh, because I own that movie and I thought I'd just watch that, but maybe I'll watch the Disney Plus version.
Yeah, do you own the 4, the HD, what is that, the 4K?
I just have the streaming one I bought, but I might have the Blu-ray, actually. Yeah. I know I have the Blu-rays of the original, but I never find myself wanting to go through the energy of putting a disc in a player, so I always opt for the streamer. Mm-hmm. I know, isn't that horrible?
What kind
of cinephile am I?
If I can't find a Blu-ray in the span of 20 seconds, I purchase it on Amazon. I'm like, I can't be bothered. I'm going to just purchase the streaming version right now. And you know, 4K Ultra.
Plus you get that X-ray.
Oh, man. I went on the scene.
Tell me everything, Amazon.
Yeah. All
Where
right,
can
boys.
I buy these products on your website, Amazon? They do that.
I know.
They haven't done that.
I know. The Grail Diary.
So regarding this movie and how many...
What my
rating is out of our famous 007 scale. This is a 007 out of 7 for me.
Love it, Matt. That's
do you
awesome.
Remember what we gave the others? I mean, Raiders was for sure 7.
Nope, but go with your heart.
What do we think we gave? What do we give Temple of Doom? I've not been writing these down like I normally do. I'll just have to go off my gut. I'm going to give this a 6 out of 7.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm, mm-hmm. So average would be 3.5. You know,
I'd say 6 out of 7.
Okay.
So it's
both wrong. It's cool.
Now, do you wish Sean Connery could have popped back?
I wish
a great character.
I do wish Sean Connery was in Crystal Skull.
Clearly,
he's supposed to be in the wedding scene, I think.
Really? I thought for sure the Oxley part was written, at least with the hope of him playing it. And
he almost was going to do it.
Really?
Yeah. Like, that was the one thing he was going to come out of retirement for.
Yeah, the Oxley, Mac, those variations that they couldn't.
Read Frank Darabont's
draft.
That's funny. I thought it was supposed to be more Ravenwood. It's Marion's dad who is Oxley.
Oh,
they changed
nice
it.
We talked about that the way they should spin this series off is not, indeed, they should do a Ravenwood series, young Abner Ravenwood, or like, you know, 30s Abner Ravenwood.
Maybe with his teenage daughter. That'd be cool.
Yeah. Yeah.
Father-daughter kind of adventure series.
Absolutely.
I also saw a Reddit poll that was amazing. People picking Marion's best outfit in Raiders. I voted. Turned out it was the number one for all indie fans. Can you guess what?
I would vote the red pants, like Cairo Street
Square. Yeah, that's it, guys.
Yeah.
The Cairo Street outfit is awesome.
The exact copy of which is in the Indiana Jones 10 Spectacular.
Oh, Brantley, if you're listening, if there's any way to get to the bottom of, was Connery going to be in that movie and who was he going to play? Because, and was it Ravenwood? Was it Henry Jones Sr. that was Oxley, or was he just at the wedding? I bet it was hoped that he would play one of the bigger parts, but then if they were going to get him at all, it would be just a cameo at the wedding. But that also was interesting that they were, you know, originally thinking of him for Skyfall.
Yeah.
As, what's his name? Cade. Kincaid.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That Albert Finney played. Yeah.
Yeah. His
Emma.
Big, victory lap was, I guess, Being of Extraordinary Gentlemen was supposed to be his last.
Was that his last?
I think it's Sean Connery's last movie, right? Or last action genre movie.
No, I think it was his last acting.
Was it?
Role. Yeah.
Not like You're the Man Now, Dog?
No, that was right before.
You're the dog now, man. That's what he said.
That's the Island of Dr. Moreau.
And he hated the director.
You're the dog now, man.
He hated the director of League of Extraordinary Gentlemen.
Yes. Yeah. God damn it. I wouldn't want to be a guy who's on Sean Connery's last movie, Suffering No Fools.
Okay, let's see. His last...
Darby and the Little
He did
people.
A CG.
Yeah, his last film was Sir Billy. And he played Sir Billy as a voice in 2012. But his last... And then he did From Russia with Love, that game in 2005. Freedom, A History of U.S. He played John Muir. That looks like maybe a documentary. But yeah, League of Extraordinary Gentlemen, 2003. That's crazy that he lived. What year did he die? 2020? So 17 years, he never did a film. And he was just up there watching tennis, living in a castle.
Yeah, but I think that's how true stars do it, man.
Every year of Wimbledon, it was just exciting to see.
I think also, you know, the Al Pacino, he would show up there. That's so cool. Yeah. Oh, that's awesome. You know, and Robert De Niro and Al Pacino are getting ladies still pregnant, having to pay off child support and alimonies. Insane. Think about it. Those guys.
I didn't know that. Is that right?
Yeah. Those guys are going to be on their deathbed with like a camera going like, okay, you're Thanos's grandpa, Al Pacino, action. And we'll be like, and then they'll do some de-aging thing on it. Sean Connery being like, guys, you know what? I'm good.
Yeah.
I'm going to just spend the last 12 years watching tennis. And
I was reading, I read Heat 2, and you know, it sounds like they're gearing up to maybe make a movie of that with Adam Driver, possibly as young De Niro.
Oh my God. When you said Heat 2, I thought you said He 2. Like it's a new
it's a Me Too movement.
Hashtag He 2. Like some men's rights thing.
That's so gross.
And De Niro, Pacino finally coming out against cancel culture.
Are you taking the red pill?
Yeah, but like if you've read that book, it takes place before Heat and after Heat. Austin Butler's rumored to be playing Val Kilmer and Adam Driver, De Niro.
Whoa. Who's Pacino? Hoo-ha.
I don't know, because also it takes place present day too. So
yeah. So this would be
all that's left.
Late 70s, early 80s.
Early 80s. And then there's a bit that takes place right after the Heat movie story. And then current day. Val Kilmer, because Chris Chehurlis, that role, his role is prominent in this book. Ooh. But, you know, Val Kilmer isn't really in fighting shape.
Oh, right.
Sadly. But would they use him and then just use like AI voice on him or something?
That would be.
But imagine you get Pacino and Val Kilmer current day. Those are two of the loosest cannons you could possibly put on a movie since Brando died.
Yeah.
I mean, hey, you gonna be using that voice of yours?
Cause she got a great ass.
Give me all you got. Give me all you got. Bing, bang, bong. Ding, ding, dong. Hooah. Gotcha.
I like it. He, when he goes, he's like, sorry, I'm not concerned about the fucking chicken dinner. When he comes back. Sorry, I just saw somebody murdered. I'm not concerned about the fucking chicken.
Do you mind if I improvise and carry this television set around for a while? You know that was improvised.
He walked up onto set that day holding a TV and refused to drop it. So they had to figure out a way.
What?
To...
I found it on the curb. It's good.
I put it in my trailer. If I put it in my trailer. Some team's just going to take it.
Just needs to wipe off. It's good. All right, everybody.
Well, that was fun, guys.
I can't believe it.
We'll see you more. Sooner than later, I think, this time for Crystal Skull, because we got to get that in because Dial of Destiny is creeping up on us. It's the 6th when we record this. This comes out the 30th, though. I just saw that the LA premiere is the 14th. What do we know about getting any tickets to that thing? Anybody out there listening?
You're the one who just was with Harrison Ford.
I can't say why or how, but we'll talk about it next time.
All we can say is it was fabulous.
Two boys now. Both of you got to meet Harrison Ford. I haven't even got to hear a whisper, get a smell from him.
Yeah, you're next.
Paul Scheer has a good story where he saw Empire Strikes Back and behind Harrison Ford at a rescreening. And when he said, she says, I love you. And he said, I know. Harrison Ford laughed.
Oh,
that's fantastic.
Yeah.
It's probably the... Didn't remember it. And, oh, look, Siri's back to close us out.
Shut up, Siri.
Bye, Siri. Bye, everybody.
Bye.
Matt and Matt. James Bonding Podcast.
Flexibility is great. That's why there's yoga. Flexibility for your insurance coverage is great, too. That's why there's United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, United Healthcare Insurance Plans offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. One of these plans may be right for you if you're, say, between jobs, coming off your parents' plan, turning a side hustle into a full hustle, or even missed open enrollment. Want more flexibility? Find out more about United Healthcare Insurance Plans at uh1.com.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.